Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hang in. Dude, there it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. What's up, y'all? I've got a great interview to share with you, and if you haven't heard my previous conversations with Justin Thomas and Sam Burns, you can go to the feed right now to check those out. We've also got a PGA Championship recap covering everything from Michael Bach's movie script weekend to Tom Kim's adventure in the swamp. Today, you're going to hear from the country music singer and songwriter Jake Owen. Jake is not only an incredible storyteller and gifted musician, he's quite the player. Jake talks about playing with Jordan Spieth in the AT&T Pro-Am, getting a sponsor's exemption on the web.com tour, and a golf-adjacent game that he's invented, the Owahoe Bucket Club. So let's get right to it. Here's Jake Owen.
All right, well, Jake Owen, you're a busy man. Played Augusta National last week, hosted a golf tournament that we're going to get into, and dropping a new album this month. Jake, I'm excited to talk to you, but first, our relationship started at Pebble Beach at the AT&T event, which is one of my favorite events to play in. But really, all the golfers and celebs are so excited to meet each other. It's like, it's a very weird situation how the golfers want to meet the celebs, but the celebs are even more excited to meet the golfers. That week is probably one of your favorite weeks of the year, I'd imagine.
Oh man, it's definitely probably my favorite week of the year. And you're right, we go way back, man. I don't know what year that was when we were out there and we got to meet, but that I'm pretty fortunate, as you and a lot of folks know, that for the last 10 years I've played with Jordan Spieth, and that was just luck of the draw. I was lucky enough, honestly, the first year to play with Kelly Kraft, who's right. Just legend himself. And when Kelly didn't come back the next year and Tony Romo didn't come back to play with Jordan, Jordan said, "Hey, Jake, you want to play?" And luckily enough, I haven't got kicked out yet. So I look forward to that week every year.
Dude, it's crazy y'all been playing that many years. I would have guessed it would have been somewhere closer to like 6 years, 10 years to me. The time has just flown by.
It has, man. It's really wild. Someone told me that this year, and I think it might have been Jordan. Jordan said it was like it was maybe the ninth year we've played together, but his 10-year total as far as like him being his first exemption out there. Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, it's 2023. That was about 2013, 14 time. So pretty wild, man. I guess, wasn't it 2015 when Jordan won the Masters?
Yep.
Yeah, and I remember it was the year after we played together because all my buddies.
Wow, you had some pressure then on you.
That's your guy, you know? Yeah, yeah.
So pretty much all of those years, y'all were paired with DJ and Wayne Gretzky, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I know y'all got plenty of stories like that, but Jordan wanted me to ask you, said, what was your warm-up routine like in comparison to maybe the best athlete of all time in Wayne Gretzky? The difference between those two warm-ups.
You said Jordan wanted you to ask me that? put it this way. I tell everybody this, you know, granted, Jordan Spieth is just such a good guy and obviously like the utmost competitor, right? So every morning, you know, I'd walk out on the range before the tournament, and he and Grell are out there like grinding, you know, and he'd always say, "Good morning, partner," you know, and handshake the Greller. Then I'd look over, And DJ, just like, that's what I've always loved about DJ, is that how he just looks like he does not give a shit about anything. Like, he does, but he just gives this vibe that he doesn't. And so he's just like casually just hitting balls, you know, and I'm like, where's your partner? You know, he's like, oh, he's over at the other range. He's over at the other range. I was like, where's the other range? He's like, the bar. He's at the bar. Wayne hates never have hit golf ball. I don't know that I've ever seen Wayne like actually warm up before a round, but he was in there getting lubed up pretty good. So he said that's his practice routine.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get those levels right. You are playing in front of big crowds, for the most part, being the marquee group. So got to go out there and make sure you're in the right place. I guess Wayne's the man. I think, was it me, you, and Wayne had a putting contest on the putting green at Spyglass in a weather delay? Is that right?
I believe that was the truth. Did I take your money that day?
I think you may have, because you didn't let me forget about it the entire week.
Mackenzie Hughes was also there.
That's right.
And took his cash. That actually happened to be the same. There was that same, I'll never forget this either, that week. You have to ask Jordan about this and he'll tell you, but we played a practice round with Patrick Cantlay. I've never played ever. Yeah. With Patrick Cantlay. I admire his golf game. I love his golf swing. Jordan's like, oh man, Patrick's a good guy. Like, just quiet, but we'll have a good time. So we get on the first tee and you're like, what are we going to play? You know? And Jordan said, well, I usually give Jake like three aside. And so he's like, all right, fine. And we played nine holes. And I think I shot like one under or something like that. And Patrick was not happy about handing me $100. He's like, you screwed me on the first hole, Jordan. thanks to Jordan. He's put some money in my pocket based off of, winning on the first hole.
Yeah, I don't mind handing you cash. That was a very fun experience. I think I've told that story multiple times. It's like, dude, yeah, I putted with Jake Owen and Wayne Gretzky and of course Mackenzie Hughes. Who could forget my guy? All right, so you've played with Jordan, like we talked about, so many years. But I'm curious, being his partner, he's been in contention a lot. He's won once. And Jordan said one time you came up to him with like five holes left and you said, are you going to win this thing? So I can imagine as a partner, you're like, okay, how do I handle this situation? I'm sure it's changed over the years and you've gotten more comfortable with Jordan to figure out how to navigate getting out of his way, but also helping him at times to like stay out of his own way.
In a weird way, like I definitely recognize, you know, that he's out there to do a job. He is. But I also think that I have a responsibility of a guy that's not, I mean, I'm not a real golfer. I'm just out there enjoying it. And if anyone's having a blast, it's me. Right. And the rest of us amateurs that just get this luxury of walking along the side of the top golfers in the world at one of the top golf courses in the world.
Incredible.
And soaking that all in. And meanwhile, usually it's like my dad's caddying for me. The year Jordan won, my dad was caddying for me. So
yep.
I tell people this a lot. That was terrible weather that year. Like one of the first rounds we played over at Monterey and the pouring down rain, like
30, I was the group in front of you, dude.
Yeah. 30 mile an hour winds. And I think Jordan shot like 66 in the rain, you know, like it blew my mind actually. But then again, as you know, Jordan, I mean, some of that stuff, it's like, he plays better when he's challenged by that type of thing. And we watched every shot from Thursday till he knocked the putt in on Sunday and won the tournament. And I don't know how many people can say that they've, you know, people play pro-ams, whatever, but be able to walk and watch every single shot from Thursday to the last putt on Sunday and see it all is really cool, first off. But to be able to kind of be there with him and kind of nudge him a little bit, I mean, he'll tell you, like, there's multiple times where, you know, I watched him, like, that inner kid in him come out, like, when he missed, like, a 3 or 4 foot putt. And he'd just be so pissed at himself that he'd carry it with him for like three holes. And it would just, it'd be no different than me telling one of my buddies that I was playing with. I'd be like, bro, you need to relax, man. Like, you're the best, like, you're one of the best golfers in the world. You missed it. Who cares? Move on. And so there'd be a few times where Greller would just like kind of push me back a little bit, like, Jake, ease up a little bit, you know, like he's playing for real money right here. But that year he won it, I'll never forget. We were playing with Sneds. And we were on the 18th hole and Jordan pulled out like his little 4-wood hybrid that he likes to hit orange shaft thing he's got in it. And I'll never forget Sneds, right before he hit it, Sneds goes, meow, right? So I can't imagine trying to hit a, like, leading the tournament drive on number 18 at Pebble, where I usually yank it left. And he had to listen to Sneds, like, give him the meow, the cat's meow, right before he hit it. And Jordan's like, I don't care. He's like, I'm not losing this golf tournament. And he did. He dinked it right down the fairway, dinked another one down the fairway, and he got out of there with the W. So, those are the kind of moments that, like, I really feel lucky that I got to be around for guys like Jordan. And, you know, obviously, too, that year, a couple years ago, when Jordan was on the cliff on number eight.
I mean,
as close as I am to this screen right now from watching him hit that shot. And that was a very, like, wild moment, because I remember we walked up to it and my first thought was, no way he's going to hit this, right? And Jordan, like, kind of gets up and steps up to, like, test if he can stand on it or not. And right as he did that growler, he's like, Jordan, no. Back, no. And without even missing a beat, Jordan, probably using some explicit term, told Greller, he's like, Greller, seriously, back up, get away from me. And he was real serious. And he never, from that moment, never doubted he was going to hit that shot. And I just was standing there kind of thinking, wow, this could be dangerous, really dangerous.
He could have died.
Greller stepped back and didn't say a word. And I asked Jordan about that. I was like, why are you so, like, you told him just get away from you. And Jordan said, he's like, I already knew I was not supposed to hit that shot. The last thing I needed was someone else telling me as well that I didn't need to hit it. So I just figured if I got him out of my way, it was only truly on Jordan at that point. But he, like, cried. He embraced Greller after that shot and hugged him and, like, basically cried, like, I can't believe we just hit that shot. Because he said it's like that's the only shot ever in his life in golf where he literally was like, could have been like a life or death situation.
Yes. I mean, and they talk about it all the time, about how they regret hitting that shot. But I remember watching it live, and besides just the fear involved in it, he hit the shot and still had found a way to talk and complain about where it ended up. I was like, dude, you're alive. The ball's over the water. It's on land.
I was in the middle of the fairway and I dunked it in the water. So, I mean, to hit it, like, I mean, he had like a downhill shoulder leaning lie.
Yeah.
And he just, I think he hit 8-iron or something, maybe 6.
It went long left. I remember that.
Yeah, long left, but it was unbelievable.
Which is no good there, but still, it's on land. You're alive.
Right.
We talk about the most dangerous shot you've seen him hit. What's the best shot you've seen him hit in that event?
In that round, that Thursday round when he won, it was maybe number 18 or 9? I don't know how they play it there at Monterey.
18's that uphill Dog Lake right, par 4. 9's the par 3.
Okay, so 9. We finished on 9.
Nice. And
that day, as you remember, as we said, it was literally like 1 minute it was hailing or sleeting, yeah, and then it would just be beautiful, and then it would start raining 40 miles an hour winds. And
it was I remember I hit a 4-iron that day.
Yeah. Same thing. He smoked like a 3-iron or 4-iron into the breeze, into the rain, in the rain, like wearing rain gloves. And he hit it like this far from the pin and tapped it in for a 2 to finish out his round of like a 66.
Yeah. That was not a birdie pin.
No. And, I saw multiple shots like that day. You know, I remember Jordan telling me one of the reasons Dustin is as great as he is. It's a short, like 375 par 4 that usually those guys are hitting 3 woods, and then they'll hit like a sand wedge in there.
Yeah.
Funky green. Both of them smoked driver off the tee that day. And then they still had like 230, maybe at, like playing 230, but 185 probably, but playing 230. And I'll never forget watching Dustin take his 3-iron or 4-iron at 175 yards, which is usually what his 7-iron, and absolutely mash a 3-iron into that breeze, into that wind to like 3 feet. And Jordan just shook his head because he's like, you can't practice that kind of shot, right? Like, you have to truly believe that you can swing that hard at a 4-iron into the breeze And make it go what would usually be a 7-iron distance. And
it's incredible.
That kind of stuff to me as a golfer and a fan of golf, I just like, I love it. It just, it amps me up.
I guess your foundation has put on an event at the Tiger Woods restored par 3 golf course at Pebble Beach, like the last 2 years. I didn't realize that it happened, but Jordan mentioned that, I guess, maybe your friend and your dad had a hole in one last year, like at the exact same time.
That was wild. Yeah. So I'm really grateful throughout the last 10 years or so to have built a lot of great relationships out there at Pebble, and Steve John and Clint Eastwood have just been so gracious to me and have allowed me to incorporate my foundation, which is the Jake Owen Foundation. And our motto is helping people in the places they call home. So we're able to do events all over the nation, especially with the way I travel, and we're able to raise funds for all different kinds of beneficiaries in those respective areas, assuming they all have a 501. And so when Steve John asked if I would like to use the newly renovated, updated Tiger Woods par 3 course that they call the Hay, we created this little this golf tournament. It's just a par 3 tournament on one of the early days of the Pebble Pro-Am, and they call it the Hay Jake. So anyways, the first year we were all playing, my caddy that year that wasn't my dad was my best buddy who'd never been to Pebble Beach. And he was playing in the group behind us. And we were on number 9, which is the Tiger hole, coming in, it's his signature hole, coming in towards the clubhouse. And right before my dad hit, I turned around and I saw my buddy Ted throw his club in the air and start running. And he's like, it went in. And I couldn't believe it. And so I start running down the hill to give him a hug and tell him congrats. And then when I ran back up the hill to meet Jordan and my dad and everybody on the green on the hole we were supposed to be playing, my mom was standing there. I said, can you believe that? Like, Ted just made a hole in one down there. And she goes, oh, dad just did too. I'm like, what? And sure enough, when I ran down to say hey to Ted, my dad, his next shot, he hit his in the hole when I was running down to tell Ted congrats. So that was a pretty special moment out there and something that we'll always remember. And he was playing with Jordan, which was even cooler. Speaking of Jordan, and we almost, like most of us, call him, like, you know, the golden child. Like a little
the golden boy.
Golden boy. He, I referenced earlier in 2015, he won the Masters. And I have a picture. It's actually pretty cool. Maybe I'll send it to you. You can input it in this. But he was gracious enough to come and play in my charity event in Florida at my hometown.
I've seen the story. This is incredible.
This is an incredible story.
It is. Yeah.
So he got off the airplane and he's got draped over his shoulder the green hang-up bag that says Jordan Spieth 2015 Masters winner. So he's just like, I was like, dude, you got to let me take your photo. So I took his photo. He's like walking off the plane with his Masters jacket on to our little hometown of Vero Beach, Florida. And the next day, we played, and there was a guy who wrote a great article, I believe it was like Golf Magazine or Golf Digest or something, explaining how seeing Jordan play that day and the entire town coming out to watch Jordan play, especially because he just won the Masters, was like the early days when Ben Hogan would play practice rounds at courses in small towns and the whole town would come out and watch him play. No ropes or anything. People were really respectful. And we got to number 13 at Vero Beach Country Club, and Jordan had hit it right down the middle of the fairway, and he was like 125 yards out, and my dad was sitting there kind of jabbing him a little bit, like, how close are you going to hit it, you know? And Jordan's like, I'm going to make it. And my dad's like, you're going to make it, really? He goes, yeah, give me odds. Like, give me odds on making this. And my dad's like, I'll bet you $100. Like, you're not going to make it, you know? And Jordan, without even thinking about odds or anything, was like, all right, you're on, no big deal. And there was 1,000 people probably standing in a mini semi-circle behind us, and maybe another 500 or 800 people behind the green. And Jordan, without missing a beat, just hit that wedge shot from 120, 125. And the minute he hit it, he looked right over at my dad. He goes, you might as well pay me right now. And it hit like 2 feet behind the hole, spun back, went right in the hole. In front of everyone. And to this day, they put this plaque right in the middle of the fairway that said 2015 Masters winner, Jordan Spieth.
Is there a video of this?
I wish there was, but
isn't that crazy? thinking about just 2015 compared to 2023. All those 1,000 people you were talking about that were behind, I guarantee you 80% would have had their phone out in 2023. But 2015, we were living good. We didn't know it.
Well, you know what's funny? You say that, dude. I went to the Masters this year, a couple days, Thursday and Saturday, and walked around both times with Jordan and his family. And just was really enjoying that. But what I enjoyed the most was that you can't take your phone into Augusta. And so in 2023, as you just said, like, it was like so refreshing to sit there and watch people enjoy a tournament without like trying to take everyone's photo and like holding their phone in front of them. Like, everyone just enjoyed that moment and they soaked it all in. And I love that. And I miss that, because in my genre of work, it just seems like, I don't know. So, I mean, I get why people want to save that memory and go home and show their friends who weren't there or whatever, but it just seems like they watch the whole show of my show through their phone, and they never actually are looking with their own eyes. Like, they're watching it through another something. But you're right. Like, to think 2015, nobody, maybe they did. Maybe someone will see this interview and say, like, I've got that video and I'll send it to you guys. But,
oh man. Well, I kind of want to transition into the event you played on the web.com tour. And I will say, it's kind of a bummer you didn't get to have Jordan as a partner for that event.
I know, right? I wish I should have called him up and asked him if he'd, you know, be my looper or something. I probably would have had some good luck.
I mean, what was it like competing? I mean, this is, a lot of people don't realize that this was your childhood dream, was to be a professional golfer before you had a shoulder injury and a wakeboarding accident. I wasn't aware of that till doing some reading.
Yeah, I always wanted to play golf. I think I was never good enough. I think there's a difference between wanting to do something, right, and then actually acknowledging that you might not have the talent that others do. And it's okay, I think, to challenge yourself and push yourself to a point. But as a kid, my dad was a really good player. He was a quarterfinalist in the U.S. Amateur. And I just always wanted to kind of fulfill those dreams that he didn't. And so I went to college, was hoping to play at Florida State, ended up not playing because of an injury. I tried to walk on and I didn't make it. My twin brother was an All-American there on the tennis team. So during that time, I quit golf basically for the next however many years and started playing just guitar and playing in bars. And that's how I got started with music. But, once I got a record deal and moved to Nashville, I worked as a caddy at this golf club for a while before I got a record deal that I'm now a member at. And I finally got back into golf. I started taking it more seriously and trying to practice and stuff. So Sneds had his event that he does here. The I guess at the time it was web.com, and now it's Korn Ferry.
Yeah.
They gave me a sponsorship exemption. So before I even played the tournament, I was already dealing with a bunch of like dudes that were pissed at me.
People don't understand how unrestricted sponsors exemptions work. They can give them to whoever. It doesn't matter. It's not taking a spot from a player. They gave it to you, which is totally fine.
Well, and I was really, trust me, I never took it for granted, because at playing with these guys and seeing how hard they grind, and I would never take a spot from anyone if I knew that someone else could play. So, I was already on edge about that. I didn't want to be the guy that showed up out there and all the guys look at me like, look at this guy, he thinks he's cool, he's out here, he's going to play well. And I will say, I'll never forget, Lonto Griffin played that tournament, and he was so nice, like so nice to me. He came up to me and was like, look, man, you know, we're all happy to have you here. This is a big deal for us to have you here, and it helps bring some more views out here to this tournament. And I just thought he didn't have to say that to me, and he did. He made me feel really good. So I've always had a lot of respect for Lonto. And anyways, I played that tournament, and I think the first day, I think I shot like 85. And I made a 9 on number 18, which is a par 5. I hit 2 out of bounds. I beat Angel Cabrera that day, though, who won the Masters and the U.S.
Heck
Open.
Yeah, let's go.
And he withdrew after the round. It was a really, it was a challenging golf course. I will say that. Yeah. Like, it wasn't in great shape. It was super long. My dad was supposed to caddy for me, and he quit like three holes in because I was having like a heat stroke. It was so hot out there. But hey, man, it was an experience. I loved it. I would do it again if I ever got the opportunity. Cause I definitely think I can play a lot better than what right. my score was, but I just remember there was a guy on Twitter just like,
I know. He said you're like 10 over through nine. And then you clapped back at him. It was amazing.
Yeah. I clapped back at him. And I was just like, yo, dude, like, if you think you can do better, like, I'll be here for the next nine holes. Like, come out here and take my sticks, bro. You can play the next nine.
It was awesome, dude. That tweet went viral, and rightfully so. I mean, dude, you're out there having a good time, doing your best. How nervous were you on that first tee? I didn't realize the first tee shot for you was a par three. It was like 215 over water, and you hit to 15 feet. I mean, that was pretty good. That's stones right there.
You know, like I said, man, I love golf. I don't think, and have never thought that I'm like, I think maybe that's part of the problem. Like, I think in golf, the confidence level is really what carries a lot of you guys through in moments where it could break people too. You know, like I loved watching this weekend, watching the Michael Block play.
Amazing,
and,
right?
And then also watching Brooks, you know, and seeing, after seeing, you know, what we all saw in Full Swing, and seeing Brooks be so vulnerable to the fact of like, just like, how do I get back to where I was? And I used to be, and he told himself, like, I could beat anyone. Like, and now I can't, like he said, like, I can't beat that Scheffler guy, you know? And so to then fast forward and see him on 18 in a moment where he could have meowed and hit like an iron down the fairway with a two shot lead, he just stepped up with that driver like he'd done all week and absolutely just murdered it down the fairway. And so what I'm getting at is, I think I've never possessed the utmost confidence in my own golf game the way that these guys that are the best do. And so for me, it's just, I always loved the opportunity to play. I love the fact that I'm healthy enough that I can go play. There's so many people that, you know, aren't. And it was just an incredible experience out there at that web.com deal, Korn Ferry. And I would do it all over again, man, if they gave me a chance to do it. I try not to take life too seriously. I just try to accept the moments that are special and cherish those forever.
Well, I want to hear more about this Uwahali. Hold on. How do you pronounce it? Uwahali Bucket Club?
It's the Uwahali.
Uwahali. And what does that mean?
Well, it means eagle in Cherokee. We have lots of bald eagles that fly around out here at my farm.
So it's a bucket tournament, and it's a bucket in a hole, and you've measured out how far it is. There's no range finders allowed.
No range finders allowed. We have scorecards that I have meticulously made all the yardages out. We have rules on the scorecards. And so the longest hole is 118. The shortest hole is actually like 47 yards. They're 40 gallon buckets that I put down into the ground. I used my skid steer and augered down in the hole. So we put these 40 gallon buckets in the ground with flag sticks. So really, like, anyone can play because you're not putting. You only use one club. I cut the grass down as short as I can get it with my like regular old mowers. And every hole's a par three. Then you play to the bucket. So it's more like target kind of golf. But the part that frustrates people is like the 10 to 15 yard little chip shot that you usually could like chip and run it in somewhere. Like, there's a good chance you chip it and it just sticks in the turf, you know what
you
mean?
Get some weird bounces out there, some
weird bounces. But
who won?
My brother actually shot 5 under on 9 holes, which was mind-blowing.
I have no idea. I say wow like I know that 5 under is really good out there, but it sounds 5 under anywhere to me is good.
Yeah, 5 under anywhere is very good. Although we do have a rule here that you cannot break the course record. And if you do, you're not allowed to tell anybody about it.
Love that.
I believe that was the course record, though, so far, Jared. And I'm telling people about it, so it's totally okay. But
is there any other rules on the rule sheet that are different than a normal round of golf?
Yeah, it's one of our rules is no kooks allowed. We don't allow kooks out here. That's on the scorecard. I think one of the other ones was the only acceptable way to test the wind is by pissing into it. So that's a rule. if you get a hole in one, if you get a hole in one of the buckets, everyone all together has to give their best eagle screech. So, you can't.
Has it happened yet?
Oh yeah. We've had lots of. But yeah, man, I mean, it went off as a banger. I'll be honest. I didn't expect it to go off as well as it did. We had huge like digital scoreboards. We had all kinds of.
Yeah. Who all played? Who were the headliners?
We had, lots of guys. We had, like Charles Kelly, a lot of guys from my like genre, obviously, like Charles right. Kelly name, Jordan Davis is a really good friend of mine who's crushing it right now.
Go Tigers.
Yeah. Go Tigers. He showed up in his LSU gear, of course.
I saw it. I loved it.
Yeah, I told him to dress up. I don't know what made him think that purple and yellow was dressing up. But he played. Who else played? My buddy Yellow Wolf. He's like a really awesome artist, hip-hop guy.
Rock he and got roll. Hit in the ankle bone, correct?
He got hit in the ankle bone by Bailey Zimmerman. New young little stallion out here on the airwaves. But, you know, I mean, it was, I think it was leading into PGA week. It was the Tuesday of this past week. So it was really tough to get some of the big name golfers here. You know what I mean?
I mean, I checked my mailbox. I checked my email and the junk email just to make sure I didn't miss the invitation. But I'll have to keep looking, you know?
Yeah, no, we just didn't send you one.
Oh, perfect. Yep. Thank you. Thank you.
But well, now that I've got your attention, see, we had a lot of people that reached out to me like yourself that were a little bummed out, Smiley, about why they didn't get an invite.
Mm.
And so we'll take those into consideration next time. We don't allow.
I'll send a resume. Maybe what I do very well in life, my hobbies, anything that really can set me apart from the other applicants.
Yeah. And that's really what it boils down to, is because you can't just join this place. You have to be invited. Mm-hmm. And guys like yourself, though, I think you would add like a definite level of just professionalism to what this Thank club would be. You are everything that we pride ourselves on, Smiley.
Well, I would love to become is it a member, or do you, if you play, are you a member? Is that how it works?
Yes. If you get asked to play in the tournament, therefore you will become a honorary member. So, noted. You know, when we have our fall classic, I'll be sure to send it your way.
Okay. All right. That's perfect. All right. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of the golf talk. I actually want to get a little into music, because I think there's some amazing parallels between your music career and kind of what a golf career, kind of the ups and downs of what you can go through. But I'm really curious, who was the first person to tell you to pursue music?
You know what? It's really funny you say that. I don't know that it was one particular person. I really can't remember one particular person that told me that I needed to do it. I had a lot of people tell me that I shouldn't do it. You know, I mean, I can really? Tell you, I can name bunches of people that said, why would you do that? You're crazy, man. But
how old were you?
I was 22.
Okay.
So I'm 29 now. So yeah, that was like 7 years ago.
So 22, you moved from Florida to Nashville. Said, I'm going to go do this thing.
Yeah, man. Like I told you, I have a twin brother. He's playing on the tennis team there. And I just remember telling him one day, I was just like, hey man, I'm moving. I'm going to move to Nashville. Like, I'm tired of playing I love Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I'm tired of playing Sweet Home Alabama and Simple Man and playing Jack and Diane by Mellencamp and like
foreshadowing
Ochre and all these cover songs everybody wanted to hear all the time. And I was trying to write my own songs, and I wanted people to like really listen and respect it. And it just seemed like in college they just wanted to hear the hits, and they wanted to. And so, I just knew there was this world out there of Nashville, Tennessee, where there was other people like me that were like the oddball and that moved there with a dream. And then if I could move to a place where other dreamers were dreaming and I dreamed along with them, then maybe, you know, maybe my dreams would come true too. And it seems like, I mean, I don't you believe that, like, if you relate it to golf, you know, you can tell yourself, like, I want to do this. Like, I want to try to get out there and do this. But until you get out there with other people that are doing it, and you put yourself and you get out there on the Corn Ferry, or you play these mini tours, and you really see how good everybody else is, it either does one of two things. You go, I'm packing up because I can't hang with these guys. or they inspire you to be just better. And so yeah. for me, I moved to Nashville, 22, 23 years old. I realized that, yeah, I might have thought I was a big fish in a little pond in Tallahassee, Florida. But when I got to Nashville, I was a little tiny fish in a big pond full of sharks. And so I realized that, like, in order for me to survive, like, I just had to step my game up and really work hard and put time and effort into my craft. And thankfully, here I am almost 20 years later. And I'm super grateful for what this life has brought me.
Were you ever close to quitting? So you were just saying that it motivated you. Was there ever a moment where, like, man, I could just move back home and go back and play and try to figure it out from there? Did leaving Nashville, was that ever an option?
No, man.
Love to hear that. God, you love to hear it.
Yeah, no, I've never thought about it not working out. You know, people ask me a lot, like, when do I feel like I made it? I felt like I made it before I ever got here. Like, the best way I can explain that is, you know, playing on a stage and being able to sing for people and see their smiles and their happiness, whether it was those college kids drinking beers and having,
didn't matter who it was. It just
didn't matter. And that's what I was going to get back to, is those are the people that encouraged me. I can't name one person, but all those kids that would come up and put a dollar in my tip jar or buy me some beers, like, they're the ones that gave me the confidence that I could do this. And then to move to Nashville, and then go out on the road and year after year build fans and see people come and support me and wear a t-shirt with my, I would never wear a t-shirt with my face on it. You know what I mean? But people do. And kids will buy a t-shirt and their parents.
Doesn't make sense, right? Like, does it just feel odd?
They'll spend their hard earned money on their kids and buy them a t-shirt. And then the kid wears the t-shirt to school the next day. And
amazing.
And I'm just like a little part of these people's lives. And I feel super grateful for that. And I've always said that no matter what, like, I've made it. Like, what more could I do? Right. Like, to me, it was never about money or fame.
Right.
It was just a matter about doing something I loved. And music was something that my dad couldn't teach me how to do. He couldn't put my hands on the golf club
or right.
guitar the way he did a golf club. Right. He wouldn't say, hey, slow your hands down a little bit when you play this next song, like, keep your head down. And I used to hate that shit. And I was like,
this is your thing, man. I know how to do this. And
yeah. So the best part for me has been that I've become successful at something that my dad couldn't tell me how to do. But what he did teach me how to do, and I told him this past weekend when we got to play Augusta together.
So cool
to think that music is kind of what brought us back there. And he didn't teach me how to play music, but he taught me how to be a good person and work hard, have good work ethic. And that's what a father, I think, his duty is to teach you the groundwork and the foundation of what a good life's all about.
Well, and you mentioned your dad, he was very close to playing in the Masters. If he would have won, was it just one more match that he would have qualified via the USAM? His good play. I mean, so he was obviously a stud.
Yeah. One more match, he would have been able to play in the Masters, which is
probably really cooler for him to play with you though. That's probably pretty surreal.
Yeah, man, it was really surreal. And he's just, my dad beat cancer 10 years ago and we didn't know if he'd ever play golf again. The doctor told him when they cut his neck open and down into his shoulder that they said, you know, you're probably never going to play golf again. And my dad looked right at the doctor when he said that. And my mom will attest to this too. My dad goes, no, I'm playing golf again. I'll play again. And so sure enough, he is. I mean, I've played with my dad in the last few years where I've watched my dad shoot, you know, 69, 70, 73 years old. So
I love your pop, man. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I'm proud of him.
All right. So your first name is Josh. I didn't know this. Does your dad call you Josh? Like, when did you get to Nashville and there was a bunch of other country music stars named Josh? So they're like, you all want to go with Jake? Like, how did all this come about? I was reading this.
No, that's a good question. So many people have had that misconstrued over the years, but I did. What,
tell me.
I honestly did it myself. So it's kind of like a sentimental thing for me. And it's funny because I thought about this yesterday. My granddad, I never got to meet him, was my mom's father. And he passed away at the age of 49 from a heart attack. And my whole life, my mom always told me how much I resembled my grandfather that I never met, and how it's her dad, and how much he loved country music, and how he would have just been proud of me because she hated country music when she was a little girl. And he would pat her on the shoulder when they were riding in his truck, and he would say, "That's some good music right there. You're going to see one day, that's some good music." And she's like, "Oh my goodness, all these years later, my son is singing country music for a living." And so anyway, to get back to why I'm Jake and not Josh is, you know, for 18, 19 years of my life, or maybe let's say 20, because I went off to college and I was still Josh. That's all people knew me as. But when I moved to Nashville on my own, at the time there was Josh Turner, who's a great artist. There was a guy named Josh Grayson who had some hits on the radio at the time. And there was another kid, believe it or not, his name was Josh Owen. And he was, I think he was from Texas. Okay. And, and so when I moved there, I just taught myself, I was like, I don't want to be another Josh in a sea of Joshes. And I had never heard anybody named Jake. And except my granddad went by Jake. And so I thought, who would it be to honor my granddad? And so like the day that I got there, I just started telling people my name was Jake. And now I have more people call me Jake than ever called me Josh. And it's been pretty cool because I've had a good career, and I'm able to kind of like think about my granddad, Jacob.
That's so cool.
Up there looking down on me, smiling, you know?
Does anybody call you Josh anymore, like family members?
You know, people slip up sometimes and they'll go, "Hey, Josh," you know, or I'll hear someone out like somewhere yell to someone else named Josh and I'll turn around. But yeah, I don't know, man. Most people, everybody calls me Jake. Like my mom call me Jake. It's kind of, it's funny, you know, but it's a good day. I think it's fitting. Jake to me has always been like something that's a fun name and enjoys life. And I kind of feel like that's how I am. I like to have a good time.
I love it. Do you think I would have needed to change my name to, or do you think Smiley was a good country music star name? Or do you think we would have needed to change that?
I think Smiley would have been a great country name, you know?
Okay.
Smiley Kaufman. I mean, it does sound like it's got a ring to it. So when you want to put out your first album, I think it'll be a great, I can already see the record cover.
I liked it on the first tee, but man, it sounds nice walking out on the stage. I've done a couple karaoke hits a time or two in my day. So who knows where this day will take me. I already got a mic in my hand.
I know you got a mic in your hand. You're getting used to being on TV, you know, in front of the people. So I think you need to give the people what they want, Smiley.
Let's go. Do you think it's harder to make it to the PGA Tour or to become a country music star?
Great question. I think it's harder to become a PGA Tour player. And I'll tell you why. Yeah. These guys out there, they have guys around them that are their team, but they can't leverage them when it comes down to putting the tee in the ground and putting the ball in the hole. That's on you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of leveraging that happens within the music business. Don't get me wrong. You still got to make the music and make the hits, but there is so much backdoor trading and stuff happening in order to leverage artists. You know what I mean? It's just
right.
So absolutely just like disgusting sometimes that I think that there's like, that's why you see sometimes you'll wonder why you're like, why is that being played? Like, you know, but you can't fake golf. You can't fake talent. And the true talent rises to the top. And honestly, same in music. I mean, like, look at a guy like Chris Stapleton. I mean, in our format, right? Like, I've known since the day I heard that guy sing in a room where we're writing a song. I'm like, why is this guy not the biggest superstar in the world when it comes to making music? And it was just, for him, it was just about him wanting to do it. And no, you don't have to manipulate that. You don't have to tell people or hype people on Chris Stapleton. Like, he goes out and sings and plays guitar and you're like, oh yeah, I see why that guy's awesome, right? No different than when you sit and you watch a guy like Rory McIlroy hit range balls and you hear the sound of it and you watch his
just different
and you're just like, yeah, it's just different, you know what I mean? But I do think there's a lot of correlation between grinders and journeymen in the both the music business and in the golfing world. You know, like, I consider myself like kind of a journeyman of country music. I've had a record deal for almost 20 years. I've never, in my mind, I'm okay to say this, like, I've never hit like super A-list star, you know, moments. You know, I'm not, I would never be the Tiger Woods of my genre. But I'm like, I'm pretty cool with making cuts and making a living and being able to tell people that I'm doing it, you know? And I like that aspect of it. Like, I feel like I've been kind of like, you know, like, I like listening to Kevin Kisner talk about his career, right? Like, I feel
a lot for getting for T30, man. They pay a lot.
Right, right. And I feel the same way. Like, I'm in the ball game. I'm still in the, I'm in the league. Like, I'm doing it. And I like it. And can I compete with it, with the big guys? And, can I have a number one song on top of, you know, the biggest guys in the format? Hell yeah, I can. But it's just about being like knowing who you are and getting in where you fit in. And that's a long answer to your short question about, is it harder to become a professional golfer or a touring artist? But I do believe, like, no matter what, they both take a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of sacrifice. I left my whole family and everyone behind to move up here. I went through a divorce. My little girl lives back in Florida with her mom. And a lot of that, honestly, it's stemmed from me doing this job. And it's torn a lot of my life apart, but it's also really been super fulfilling. And I couldn't be more grateful and happy for like what this life has brought to me.
A conversation that you and I had when you were on tour in Birmingham, came out to see you. And I think one of the things that's surprised me so much is how much being the headliner, how much expense-wise you have to cover for the tour. And I think people don't realize that with professional golfers, how much we have to cover. It's the entire support staff. It's all the flights, the hotels. And unlike a sports league where they pay for everything that you do, you just show up and everything is covered. So when it comes to touring, who all is on the payroll when you're the headliner?
Good question. Everyone.
it's literally the openers. Like, I thought it was fascinating when you were talking about it. I just never would have thought about it.
Yeah. So when you came out and we played the baseball stadium there in Montgomery is where it was, right?
Birmingham Barons Stadium, yeah. Regents Park in Birmingham.
That's right. We crushed a Jack Brown's burger that day.
Yes, we did. So good.
So that tour, I think I had Jordan Davis was on tour with me, and so was Chris Jansen, I think.
Yeah.
And so they're both, you know, I have to pay both of those guys to come out.
That's coming out of your end of the deal. It's,
oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, in order to take people out on the road, you got to pay them what they are deeming that they need to come out on the road. And so those people as well, like, they have expenses. They've got their buses and their crew members and band members and all that they've got to pay. So for me, yeah, you got to pay the opening acts, and then you've got my cost is everything from, I mean, at this point in my life, I've scaled back a little bit, but I've got 3 tour buses out there on the road. So you're paying for the tour buses, and then you got 3 bus drivers. You're paying for the 3 bus drivers and their salaries. And then you got, eight guys, well, let's say 5 other band members, and then another 3 or 4 crew members, truck drivers, got 2 trucks. So you got to pay for the trucks and the truck drivers, and you got to pay for the fuel to go into the buses and trucks.
Dude, keeps going and going and going. I just, every time I think about when an artist comes on and they're about to start touring and they're doing these interviews like you're doing with your new album, all I do is think about all the expenses that they have. I'm just so fascinated by it.
Yeah. And I think that's cool that you're thinking like that. But like I told you a minute ago, man, like, at the end of the day, no matter what business you're in, there's going to be cost of doing business.
Of course.
So I've never, I enjoy money. I enjoy making it. I enjoy putting it away for my family and doing things for people. I love my foundation. That's a big part of what, like, this life has brought me, like, the platform to be able to raise awareness for that. But like, money has never been something that I fixate on. And so I just have kind of always looked at it like, when I look around and I see all these people that I work with, I don't ever look at them like a dollar figure, like, they're costing me this. I look at them as like a tool and a human being that gave me their life. and is away from their family too. And they're well worth whatever I'm paying them because they are elevating me to a place I couldn't do without them. Mm. That makes sense, right? So like, I mean, shoot, I could go out by myself and play guitar on a stage and drive myself to the show, but I wouldn't put on the same show that I do when I have these talented people around me and a guy that drives me there where I can get my rest. And, you know, it's just, it's teamwork. Even though it's my name on the ticket, like it should say all of our names on the ticket because I couldn't do it without these people.
I mean, that's a great lesson of how to run a business, invest in yourself, invest in the people around you. What's the best show you've ever played? And what's the best golf shot you've ever hit? And which one of those felt better?
I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like music's always been fulfilling to me, but golf is like when you hit a good shot and it, like it
keeps you coming back, man.
It's nothing better. And as I told you earlier, I try to have the confidence. Honestly, I tell people this a lot. Like I would be a lot better musician and a better, like I would have more fun maybe with my music if I had the confidence that I do in golf. Like you were speaking of the Corn Ferry thing, I played it. Like I didn't have any doubts of playing that. I just wanted to go do it. I was excited. But I do, and maybe people wouldn't admit this as an artist, but like there are definite nights on stage where I'm insecure as hell on stage. And you wouldn't think it because you're the guy, you're on stage.
Yeah.
On you. But there's something to that where all of a sudden everybody's standing there and they're looking at you like, all right, entertain me. You know what I mean? And there's nights where like, it just doesn't like, it's kind of like anything, right? Like if you're playing golf and like, you know, you can play, but like your game's just not on that day. And like, you're trying, but like,
it's
no
long one season. It's a long season. You know, you're wore out, you know, some days you have it, some days you don't.
Yeah. And so there's nights where like my voice isn't as great as it was the night before, or maybe it's just hardly not there at all, but you still can't, you don't want to let the people down. And so you just go do, you have to do it anyway. And then you get into your head, like, well, are people, these people have never seen me before in this town. And like, is this how they're going to remember me? Is this what they're going to like? So you can get in your head like that. Whereas golf, I've always looked at it like, here's my chance to impress the guy that doesn't think I can play, right? And so this, like this past year at Pebble, we were at Monterey and I forget what hole it is. It's like 5 or 6 and it's a short par 4. And Jordan, it was like 315 to the green. And Jordan's like, hey, I want you to like rip your driver at this green. I think you can get it there. And I was like, all right, I'm down for that, right? And, but the problem is as they walked forward to go up ahead into their ball and I'm sitting there waiting on the tee box and the green hasn't cleared yet. And they have the ropes, right? The gallery guys have the ropes and all these people behind the ropes are like, come on, man. Like they want to see Jordan. They want to see Gretzky. They want to see all these guys. They don't care about seeing me trying to drive a green. And 90% of them were like, is he really going to try to drive the green? Like, come on, man. Like just let us through. He's not going to ever drive the green. And like the more people kept saying that, I was like, I'm driving this in green. and so I absolutely just mashed it, just sent a seed. And I drove it like 15 feet from the pin.
I think I remember green. Seeing that. I think,
and then I made the putt for it too.
Oh, you just love to see it. So that's it. Awesome. That's best shot. There it is.
So that's it, man. It was like, those are two shots, but like the culmination of like, knowing that if I could have totally just flailed and hit it right or whatever. And all those people would have been right. They would have been like, see, I told you, you kept this back for no reason. But afterwards, all those people behind the ropes were like, they were now my buddies. You know, I felt like I won them over because of it. So I'd much rather hit a good golf shot than like have a good show.
Oh man, that is awesome. All right. So you got a new album coming out. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it'll be out June 24th. It's called Loose Cannon. I the title's very appropriate. I feel like I'm kind of a loose cannon of a guy. I mean, whether it's, you know, 1 minute playing golf out there and, you know, trying to drive a green, or whether it's putting on a bucket tournament out here at my farm, like you never know what you're gonna get with me. And that's kind of what this album is. Like there's all kinds of stuff on this album all over the map, from my typical like good feeling stuff that I've always loved doing to stuff that's like more like aligned with where I am in my life right now. So I got four songs coming out this week that are going to be the pre-order to the album. And then the album will be out June 24th. So pretty fired up about it. And I am very grateful that you're helping me spread the word, Mr. Smiley.
Well, I am pumped to listen to it. I'm a bit of a loose cannon myself. So I feel we see eye to eye on that front.
Yeah.
And we definitely see eye to eye on the golf course. And Jake, I appreciate you coming on. This conversation's been amazing. The storytelling, and you just are so humble and such a great person to be around. So continued success in your career and the album release. And I'm looking forward to being at the Ualehi Bucket Club. Ualehi Bucket Club next year. I'm going to get it right.
Yeah, you will.
Jake, thank you, my man.
I gotta send you some merch, man. We got some hats and some shirts. So I'll get you geared up.
All right, man. Well, I look forward to getting it. Have a good one, my man.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much, man.
Well, there you have it. I love catching up with Jake, and I'm looking forward to my competitive buckets debut as soon as I can figure out the proper pronunciation of Ualehi. Ualehi? I don't know how to say it, but all I know is I want to play in it. And go support Jake when Loose Cannon drops. I feel like those tracks are going to be a part of the summertime soundtrack as soon as they're out. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back here Monday with thoughts on all the latest in the golf world. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.